Please go ahead.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the TNA Lockdown Pay-Per-View conference call. I will begin with a brief overview of the pay-per-view, and then we will open up the lines for questions for our special guest, World Heavyweight Champion Magnus, and the number one contender, Samoa Joe. TNA heads to Miami this Sunday for Lockdown, with all matches scheduled to take place inside the brutal two-ton steel cage. The matches include the World Heavyweight Championship match featuring Magnus and Samoa Joe, the Lethal Lockdown match with Team MVP featuring the Wolves and Team Dixie with Bobby Roode, Austin Aries, and the Bromans. We have the Knockouts Championship match with Madison Rayne and Gail Kim. We have Kurt Angle versus EC3, Gunner versus James Storm, Mr. Anderson versus Samuel Shaw, The Bad Influence and Chris Sabin versus The Great Muta, Sonata, and Tigre Uno. TNA Wrestling presents Lockdown, premiering Sunday, March 9th, live on pay-per-view. And as we open the lines for questions in a moment, each of you will have the opportunity to ask one question of Magnus or Samoa Joe to begin. And if time remains after a first round of questions, then we will open back up for a second round. Operator, we are ready to now open the line.
Our first question comes from the line of Mike Johnson with PWInsider.com.
Hey, gentlemen. I hope you're both well today.
Doing well, Mike. Doing well.
All right. I want to ask you guys about the importance of being able to headline the first three-hour pay-per-view in quite some time for TNA. It's been a couple of months since we've had one. And also the return of Lockdown to the original format where it's all cage matches. Does that make your job easier or harder as main eventers?
Well, I think it makes our job more difficult, you know, honestly. I mean, I think that, but, you know, but I don't think that either of us look at it from the standpoint as being, you know, something that we don't want to be involved with. I think it's just a case of, you know, it forces us to think a bit harder and to maybe, you know, to think outside the box as far as what we're going to do to, you know, to send those people home happy. But, you know, as far as the responsibility, you know, it's newer to me, you know, it's you know, it's familiar territory for Joe, and I think it's the right territory for him, you know, despite our differences on TV, you know, there's no doubt that he's, you know, that he belongs in that picture. But as for me, it's a chance to prove myself again, and I'm looking forward to it.
You know, challenges, I mean, there's always challenges in the realm of professional wrestling, and, I mean, kind of surmounting those odd challenges that aren't expected, I think, are the hallmarks of a great wrestler. So, I mean, that's more up to us, I guess. As far as the importance of us headlining a pay-per-view, one that hasn't happened in quite a while, well, I mean, it's tremendously important. I think the company's it's a very different company than it was, you know, even a short year ago. And, you know, there's a lot of great chemistry going around. And, I mean, this is this event will be the hallmark of this new team in TNA.
All right. Well, thank you, guys. Hopefully I get back on. But if not, good luck with listening.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks.
Your next question comes from Andy Evans with the Total Wrestling Show. Mr. Evans, you may go ahead with your question. Your next question comes from the line of Scott Fishman with the Miami Herald.
Review. Magnus, just wanted to get your thoughts on how has life changed for you since being, you know, becoming TNA champion, and also Samoa Joe, what is it like for you to be back at the forefront and headlining a pay-per-view and being featured on the show every week?
For me, I think that, you know, obviously there's a lot more responsibility on every level when you have the championship, such as like things like this, this conference call and the media responsibilities. You know, I tend to try and say yes to everything, and, you know, because I believe that to be the responsibility of, you know, of the championship. And just, you know, as far as more workloads, you know, but obviously with that comes more reward. And that's, you know, it's kind of, there are times where you sit back and you think, God, I, you know, I wish I just had an easy day. But you have to remind yourself always that this is what you got into the job to do, was, you know, to go as far, as high up as you could go, and you know, to be the world champion in an organization is as high as you can get in that organization. So to, you know, to be put in that position at my age and with the time I still feel like I have in front of me, it's great. You know, it's hard work, but it's good kind of pressure.
As far as me, you know, being back in the mix and in the forefront of things on the show and in the ring, I mean, it's a tremendous honor, and it's a great place to be in right now. And you know, it's one that I've always strived for, and I've never shied away from. And I always welcome the opportunity to be in this position. And you know, I'm looking forward to capitalizing this weekend.
All right, thanks, guys. Looking forward to Sunday.
Thanks, Bob.
Thanks.
Your next question comes from the line of Michael D'Souza with Radio.
Good evening, gentlemen, from England. I just want to start off with the Impact tapings that have gone on, and Wembley specifically. Magnus, you know, it surprised me, being there, that you got booed out of the building, really. Did you expect that, you know, as the returning hero?
No, because that's not what I'm intending to do right now, and it's an odd question that's been posed to me a lot, and I think that was a concern of everyone else more than it was of me. I was confident in the British fans to do the right thing, and what I mean by that is that Brit fans, they're not going to just, you know, those days of just, you know, of partisan cheering for someone just because they're from the UK or from England or wherever those days are long gone. You know, they watch the product just like everyone else. And I would argue that Brit fans watch the product more, you know, with a keener eye than any fan right now. And it didn't surprise me at all that I got the reaction that, you know, we intended to get. And I was pleased that we did, because, you know, this is a business.
Well, yeah, it was even saying that, it was surprising. But Joe, you got a better reaction, and you have a great history with Lockdown. Six years ago, you won the title there, and in my opinion, this is arguably your best chance of regaining it. Question is, why do you think it has taken so long to get back to this level?
You know, it's a funny, you know, kind of a confluence of circumstances that, you know, kind of answers that question. I mean, a lot of times I felt within the company, you know, there were those, you know, who had machinations who probably didn't want to see me at the top of the card. And now, I mean, you know, a lot of those people have fallen by the wayside, and I've still, you know, kind of stood strong and stayed very consistent in my ability and what I'm able to do in the ring. And, you know, I've always been for the long haul. So, I mean, the weight hasn't bothered me probably as much as, it has the fan base, so I'm, you know, I'm just ready to capitalize on the opportunity. I hate to sound like a broken record, but you know, anytime opportunity's been presented before me, I've always been one to jump upon it and do my very best with it.
Well, it was very great to see you both in Wembley. I'm looking forward to seeing Lockdown as well. So thank you both very much for your time.
Thank you.
Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star then the number one on your telephone keypad. We'll go back to Andy Evans with Total Wrestling Show.
Gentlemen, I'm sorry about that earlier on. I was just wondering, obviously, at the last One Night Only event, you faced off against Magnus Joe for the TNA Championship. What can the viewers expect different at Lockdown compared to One Night Only?
At One Night Only, I mean, what happened that night was a crime unto itself, but, you know, my expectation is one that, you know, we have a new force within the upper echelon of TNA. We have MVP. We have the Wolves. We have people who are available to make sure that certain contingencies are in place, that certain things that Magnus like to do in the ring to maybe win his matches don't happen.
That's brilliant. Thanks again for your time. Good luck at Lockdown. All our listeners at the show are looking forward to seeing you guys compete in action. It's been a privilege.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from Rebecca Taylor with Resurrection Magazine.
Hi, guys. I'm from Resurrection. It's a new British magazine. You know, you're our first cover star, Magnus. Can I just ask you to tell us what the experience of being the first ever British champion of a major US promotion has been like?
personally, I mean, I have to say that honestly, the fact that I was the first British guy to win a recognized world championship wasn't something that I ever thought about, because I just wasn't aware of that until it became. And, you know, until people started bringing it up when I was coming close to winning the title, you know, and I think that was just one of those things. I'd never even thought about it. One, because, you know, I'm very proud of where I'm from, but I'm not overly patriotic. For me, I've always just been about me and trying to, you know, reach the top of the business. Like, I never really thought of myself as like, oh, I've got to do it for the Brits or anything like that.
Yeah.
I will say that I was very pleasantly surprised and impressed with the amount of with the amount of coverage that it got in the UK for that reason, for the fact that I was the first Brit and how much it meant to people, and then it meant more to me, and it's always something that, you know, that's something that will always be the case. I'll always be the first, and that's a good feeling.
Thank you very much. Can I ask you as well? Yeah, at the moment you're allied with Rockstar Sports with Team Dixit, but your last match before TNA was with Marty Scurll. Have you got any favourite moments or people from your days here wrestling in Britain?
Oh God, more than I could recall, but
imagine there's a lot.
Yeah, I loved doing the camps, especially when the right team was on the road doing the holiday camps, and it would be like on when we were doing Butlins, and it would be like myself, Marty, Tom Latimer, who was in NXT as Kenneth Cameron for a while, and Ollie, and like all those guys there was a really like hungry, young, talented group, and then we would cross paths with like Drew and Sheamus and guys like that, and to see them all now go on to, you know, all our generations who go on to, you know, to have done what we've done is pretty cool.
Yeah, it is. Thank you very much, guys. Thanks a lot.
Thanks.
Your next question comes from the line of Jorge Rebello with Wrestling PT.
Hi, guys.
Hey, man.
Hello. My first question is for Joe. And in this recent UK tour, there are some news about you made a speech on the bus at the end of the tour, a very inspirational speech. Can you tell us a bit if this is true? What was the speech about? And why did you felt like you had to pass the message to the locker room?
You know, I made a more of a thank and a speech of gratitude, I think more than one of inspiration. You know, in all honesty, that week I had suffered a death in my close family, and unfortunately I was overseas, and anyway, commitments with the shows and TNA, and I wasn't able to be with my family during that time. It was a very, 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 very difficult time. And because of that, you know, the roster, who was fantastic, you know, on all sides, and you know, put on a tremendous effort and pulled off an amazingly brutal tour in a very short amount of time, and it was more of a speech of gratitude towards them and their efforts, because you know, when you're working with professionals on that level, it makes it that much easier to do your job and to be able to deliver in the ring.
Right. Just for Magnus, Joe was your tag team partner for a few times, and I was wondering how is that going to affect your game on Sunday?
Well, Joe and I have crossed paths more than once, so, you know, on both sides of the fence, you know, as far as we've been opponents many times and we've been teammates many times, so you know, there's an undeniable chemistry physically between our styles, that they sort of mesh or clash well depending on how you look at it and depending on, you know, what day of the week it is, and it makes for, you know, it just makes for good wrestling, whether we're teammates or opponents. Right now we're opponents, and that's, you know, that's where you get the best out of Joe and I, is as opponents. And I think it's going to be, you know, this will probably be the most physically intense and brutal encounter of all of our matches we've ever had in our rivalry with each other.
All right, brilliant. Thank you both.
Your next question comes from Anthony Caruso with the Capital Sports Report.
Hi. This is first part is for Samoa Joe. You won the title at the TNA Heavyweight Championship once before. What would it make you to win it for a second time this Sunday?
What makes me think I'm going to win it for a second time this Sunday?
No, what would it mean to you to win it again on Sunday?
What would it mean to me? Honestly, it's kind of a reconfirmation of what I've always believed is that, you know, I'm the deadliest professional wrestler in professional wrestling. I mean, you know, nobody ever wants to step in the ring with me. Nobody looks forward to wrestling me. I mean, I'm trouble on all ends, and I always have been. And, I mean, winning that championship is just a reaffirmation of that. And, you know, I'm looking forward to proving the world that I still am the very best.
Thanks for your time, Joe. This question is now for Magnus. Magnus, you've been the title holder since December 3rd. What do you have to do game plan-wise to combat Samoa Joe for Sunday to keep your belt?
Well, I think that I need to actually, you know, in reference to Joe's answer, I think that I do look forward to getting in the ring with him. I don't believe that I've ever not looked forward to it. You know, is it going to be physically intense? Sure. Is it going to be a war? Absolutely. You know, am I going to get beat up? No doubt. But I'm not afraid of that. And the difference is now is that the difference between Joe and I is that right now, you know, Joe has his, he has his rage, he has his anger, and he has all this pent up frustration. Whereas I have a confidence, a newfound level of understanding, you know, and now I feel like I have a better understanding and a better knowledge than ever of how to combat Joe and how to let him, you know, let his emotions work against him. And that's how it's going to play out on Sunday.
Thanks for your time and good luck on Sunday.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from David Dunn with NVPWI.
Hi, guys. I want to steer away from lockdown for a moment and speak to you about Wrestle 1 in Japan. Both of you were on that show that happened just earlier this week, was it, or possibly earlier this month. I was just wondering what your thoughts were on how the show went and the working relationship that's developing between TNA and Wrestle 1.
I thought it went very well. It was Sunday. We just got back on Monday, and it was a great weekend. And I love the way that they present pro wrestling over there. It's the press conference before the show, and the professionalism and everything of the whole unit is, you know, it's refreshing and exciting, and it's something new, and it just gives a different credibility to what we do as athletes. The show was great. I thought everybody, or, you know, all of the TNA crew who flew over there, you know, I think everybody worked incredibly hard, and I think a lot of people perhaps silenced some of their critics as far as you know, as far as their range is concerned, especially like the Bromans who tore the house down in the tag match and stuff like that. And I was very impressed with my opponent Kai. I was very pleased with the way the match went. I think everybody worked hard, and I think that it's going to be the first of many, hopefully.
I've had the chance to, you know, travel extensively in Japan and work with several different organizations. And, you know, one thing that's always been a constant is that, you know, Keiji Muto has been a master at reinventing himself and always presenting himself in a new light. It's very exciting. And the concept behind Wrestle 1, it's very, very different from the traditional Japanese promotion. I mean, it's very, very more on the fly, and it was a very interesting product. You know, I was kind of caught off guard by the style that Muto is trying to put forth in Japan. So it's a very, very promising company, and I think that the relationship between Wrestle 1 and TNA is going to be a beneficial one to both companies, and I look forward to returning to Japan.
Thank you very much for your time, guys. Good luck for lockdown.
Your next question comes from David Gilbert with Talk TNA Podcast.
I guess just to start with you, if I may. You said before that you'd like to one day work possibly behind the scenes in the wrestling business. Do you think that wrestling can somehow get back to maybe how popular it was in the mid to late 90s with, you know, millions of people watching? And what do you think it's going to take to get back there?
I think I think absolutely it can, and I don't. And I think that sometimes we have a tendency to forget the fact that the entire media landscape has changed. You know, none of the television shows, of today, even the big hitters, you know, get anywhere near the numbers that sort of record shows of the 90s and earlier periods got, just because there's simply more choice, you know. And as far as our genre is concerned, you know, with on demand and things of that nature, it's the landscape's changed. And I think that sometimes we look at the raw numbers and go, oh, you know, there's nowhere near as many people watching. But I think that we've become more of a global genre. And I think that that's one of the things that, you know, wrestling stands the test of time so well, is because, you know, it transcends languages and cultures, because it's a simple kind of live theater that plays out in front of your eyes. And I think for us, you know, to continue to further, you know, explore our international opportunities is a big thing. And I think that momentum and some wise investment and some smart moves could, you know, all it takes is a spark. And I think that, you know, obviously, you know, there's a market leader and we're not it, but we can, you know, continue to develop, you know, things that we're doing, things like the working relationship with Wrestle One and things like our new deals overseas. And we can, you know, we can continue to develop our product and our stuff and overall, you know, the whole industry benefits. And I think that, you know, it just maybe not as many people sit there and watch it at one specific time. But I think if you combine all of the times that people are buying it on demand or like watching it online and stuff like that, there's, you know, there's still a very hungry audience for pro wrestling, and we're always cultivating new ones. So yeah, absolutely. I'm confident.
Thanks, Magnus. And Joe, just quickly. Joe, you've been with TNA for several years now. Do you see yourself sort of taking on the role of sort of a locker room leader, perhaps, you know, offering advice to some of the younger wrestlers now?
You know, it's funny because I did read something akin to this earlier. Leadership, I believe, is kind of a misnomer. I mean, if anybody ever wants to come up to me and ask me a question, I mean, I'm never above that. And making myself available to be consulted, I think is just a trait of somebody who's being, a decent individual, not necessarily a leader. For the most part, you know, I think guys that do lead don't do so through words, they do so by example. And if people take my example as leadership, then I guess I'm flattered.
All right, cool. Have a great match on Sunday, guys. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, man.
Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star then the number one on your telephone keypad, and we will start taking second questions in about 5 minutes. Your next question comes from the line of James Marston with Across the Pond Wrestling.
Hi, guys. It's great to speak to you today. I hope you're both all right. My question is that we've seen a lot of new talent turn up in TNA over the last couple of months. I was just wondering if there was anyone from the current indie scene, whether that be in the UK or in the US or elsewhere, that you'd like to see TNA bring in and you think could benefit the company in some way.
I'm not that familiar with the American independent scene, obviously, having never really extensively worked on it. You know, I hear names crop up from time to time, and I make an effort to sometimes see if I can and see some of their stuff. And I'm sure that, you know, that there are some talents out there. You know, for me, obviously, my knowledge is more of the Brits out there that I think are worth a look. And for me, I think there's three Brits who are worth a look. Marty Scurll, who obviously has had a look, you know, and is continuing to improve. You know, he tore the house down with Tanahashi, not so long ago, and is continuing to develop his work and his character. Dave Mastiff, I think, is a brilliant wrestler, and so unique as a sort of super heavyweight, you know, who can move. He's very, very unique, kind of like my opponent on Sunday. And I think thirdly, Rampage Brown, who had a cup of coffee at NXT and decided it wasn't for him because he enjoys working too much, you know, and didn't like being at wrestling school again. And I think that he's a great guy with a solid attitude and a really great look and a really experienced, good wrestler. And I think that there's opportunities for all three of those at some point, and they're the three that I'd like to see get a shot and get a real look and be seen on a big stage.
You know, for me, you know, once again, I don't get an opportunity really to see as much indie stuff as I used to, being as, you know, earlier in my career, I was pretty busy along the indies, and I saw pretty much everything. But, I mean, you know, Willie Mack out in Los Angeles, I think he's kind of an undiscovered commodity, and yeah, he'd be pretty tremendous. I mean, I'm sure there's a bevy of others. I'm gonna forget and maybe totally regret here in 15 minutes. But I mean, you know, of him, he's the guy that I've wrestled and I've had experience with in the ring, and I mean, I think he's a very talented individual.
That's great. Thanks, guys. Take up on Sunday. I look forward to watching the show. Cheers.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from Lee Med with Alive Radio.
Hi, guys. Good evening from Scotland. We've got two questions very, very quickly. Joe, in the past couple of months, we've seen the departure of AJ Styles, Sting, and also Jeff Hardy's been off on a break. You've been the man that's been given the ball from the company and asked to run with it. Do you feel any extra pressure being put in that position, knowing that the previous figureheads of AJ, Sting, and Jeff aren't there anymore?
No, none whatsoever. I mean, I wanted this. You know, I asked for it, and you know, any pressure that I could have felt, I mean, would be ridiculous because I asked for the pressure. So, I mean, there's no extra pressure on me at all. I mean, and you know, whatever pressure there would you know, spawn from a fear that I don't feel that I could deliver, and I don't possess that fear. So, no extra pressure whatsoever.
Okay, thanks very much.
Enthusiasm, if anything.
Cool. Magnus, I have to ask, obviously, since you've picked up that title, both on both sides of the pond, you've been labelled a paper champion. Now, honestly, I don't think anyone believes that. But on TV, you carry off that disgruntled look very, very convincingly. I have to ask the question.
Wait, can I interrupt this? I never thought I would hear a Scottish man kiss an English man's ass so much in my entire life.
No, I thought, Joe, I was trying to figure out
what the question's going to be.
Everywhere. And looking at Nick, looking at Magnus, how he's grown since he came into TNA when he was Brutus Magnus, when he was in Gladiators over here in the UK as Oblivion. The character, the persona, he's just carried it on absolutely amazingly well. So, Magnus, I have to ask, how do the chants get to you? How do you carry off that character so well, looking disgruntled? How closely is the confidence that you have as the character of Magnus and the person that is Nick, the confidence of being a world champion?
Okay, I'll try and sift through that question and try and answer as where I think that you're going with it. I don't, anything I do or say on TV is fictional. You know what I mean? It's not a, if I happen to deliver something in a realistic way, then that's great. You know, then that's what I'm looking to do, because we're in the business of, you know, now more than ever, what we do on television, you know, we're required to do more and more acting, you know, as opposed to just, you know, wrestling, or, you know, and I think that the way that the product has evolved, that's what people are more used to now, is more realistic delivery of things. I don't necessarily always like that. I sometimes like the idea of going a little bit more, 100 miles an hour with stuff and being a bit more kind of over the top. But that's, you know, that's the product. And again, you know, we don't produce the show. We don't write the show. We perform what is given to us. And I just try and perform. I interpret the direction that's given to me and perform it in the way that I interpret it to be, you know, is what they want. So it's like when sometimes it makes me laugh that, you know, the quote unquote smart fans or the people who write, like, you know, websites or like podcasts or whatever, who haven't, you know, who spend more time watching wrestling than anybody else, you know, are also seem to be the ones who seem to have blurred the line between reality and fiction more than anyone. You know, there is no, the only Nick in that character is in the delivery of the lines, not, you know, not in any of the feelings or anything like that. Because if that were the case, then, you know, I would never have said the things I said about Sting or AJ or Jeff or even Joe, you know, because that's, it's a character, and that's, you know, and it's what my character thinks about those. those adversaries. And I think that, you know, sometimes a lot of the wrestling media, and I use that term loosely, tend to want to find something deeper than it actually is. Sometimes they want to try and find some kind of motivation behind things like, oh, is he doing this because he's upset with his, you know, with his creative direction, or did they make him do that because he has heat, you know, and all this kind of stuff. And most of the time there is nothing there. Like there is absolutely no basis to it other than this is what they decided to do, you know. And it's like sometimes it's just frustrating when there's always that implication of like there's a deeper meaning to it, like on a real level, when it's not. You know, we're making a 2-hour movie every week, you know, and we have you know, a day to put it together and execute it. So we're just entertaining. We're just doing it in the best way we can. And if it comes across as realistic, then great. I'm glad that you think so.
Thanks very much, sir. Cheers, lads.
Your next question comes from Louisa Rogers with Calling Spot.
Hi, guys. Thanks for this opportunity. I was just wondering if you could play Fantasy Booker and take any people from any point in wrestling history, maybe your childhood heroes, who would you pick and what type of match would you put them in and why?
Wow. I guess, you know, I would have loved to have worked with Flair when Flair was in his prime. Although I don't know if my cardio would have held up. Guy's a machine. And I guess, you know, if I could have been in any match ever, I would have done well at it. I would have taken Hogan's place at Mania 3 with Andre. The idea of being in front of 93,000 people is like, you know, it's just boggles the mind. So I guess that's what I would take.
Awesome. Cheers. Joe, what about you?
I'll go with Bruiser Brody. I think he had the kind of wild energy that I'd like to get into a fight with. So, I don't know. I think we would have a quite a nice little row, and I think the people would enjoy it.
Oh, that's brilliant. Cheers, guys. Good luck for the weekend.
Thanks, man.
Your next question comes from Scott Fishman with the Miami Herald.
Hey, again. Just curious, you know, Miami's such a unique place. I was just curious if you guys have ever come down here, and if so, do you have any memories of the area? And also, if not, then what are your thoughts about the city, and what do you look forward to seeing?
I've been there once or twice. I've only been there a couple of times, and both very, very briefly, and they were both just to shoot for a day shooting of stuff, so I didn't really get to see very much. I spent most of the day in a warehouse, you know, shooting scenes. But, I'm looking forward to getting to actually experience it, you know, on a real level, getting the whole weekend there, maybe getting a bit of exploring done if I get the chance.
I've had the opportunity to travel down to Miami several times, throughout my life. And, it's a very fun city. And, I do have very many fond memories that probably aren't fit for, this conference call, from Miami. But, it's a town that, that's filled with very exuberant people. And, I think they'll bring that energy to the crowd at lockdown.
All right. It's funny when I ask about the memories. It's like, oh, it's something we can't share. And it's like, oh, that seems like a common theme with everyone. But, all right. Thanks a lot.
Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. And at this time, we would like to take second questions. Your next question comes from the line of Rebecca Taylor with Resurrection Magazine.
Hi again, guys. Can I just ask you, Magnus, have you got any highlights for us about working with Sting and being put over by him?
With Sting? Every time I've got to work with Sting was a huge honor. I think the first time I got to wrestle him was in my first year in TNA, and it just sort of came out of the blue. And I was totally in awe of the guy then, and, you know, I've always, and ever since, he took a shine to me, I think it's safe to say, and he really made an effort to speak up for me, you know, internally a lot, especially when things weren't going so well for me. He made a point to always kind of, you know, to speak up for me and to sort of make people take notice of me. And obviously that's something I will always be eternally grateful for. And I think that I just have a profound, deep respect for the guy on a personal and professional level, because, you know, professionally he's, considering that he's never worked for the big company, he's had you know, a career path that, you know, that you'd be hard pressed to find a better career to try and emulate, as far as he's made a ton of money, you know, had a ton of success and is healthy and happy, and, you know, and he's kept a lot of his money from all accounts. So he's sitting pretty, and I think that's something that we all hope to achieve one day.
Definitely. I talked to the Blossoms last week, and we were talking about the wrestling versus performance of the business. They said people like to create unnecessary drama too, but can you both tell us what's the best part about being a wrestler?
The best thing about being a wrestler? I guess just the doing it, you know, when it's that day when you realize you're getting, you know, Joe especially, but, you know, we can both sit here today and both say that we make, you know, a pretty handsome living. And I think that, you know, when you have the chance to kind of sit back and go, you know, I get paid for this. You know what I mean? I get paid to do this. Like, that's a pretty cool feeling, and I'm making a decent living at it. And then we have those days where sometimes it'll be like a house show, or sometimes it'll be TV or whatever. But for me, it's, you know, when you have that day when you're in the ring and you're in there with the right guy, with the right crowd, and everything's just going brilliantly, and like you get lost in it, and it's just happening, and it's just easy, and it's fun, and it's like that. You know, that's when you just go, this is what you live for, you know. And I've been fortunate to have quite a few of those moments over the last sort of 2 years. So yeah, that's it for me.
What about you, Joe?
The best part of being a wrestler is I am fortunate enough to have had the experience of traveling around the world and seeing many, many different and experiencing many different cultures up close and personal. And it's been to be sent there to entertainment. And I think that's a gift unto itself. I think it's one of the fundamental great things about professional wrestling, is that, you know, if you do find any monochrome of success, you're allowed to travel the planet and meet the peoples of the world and bring this brand of art called professional wrestling to their door. And I'm always thankful for that opportunity.
Really looking forward to screwing my head off at the TV watching you both wrestle. Thank you very much. Bye.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Your next question comes from the line of Mike Johnson with PWInsider.com.
You guys touched upon it kind of being a new team right now within TNA. Talk to us a little bit about what it's been like as guys who have been under contract for quite some time, who went through that last regime, and things just didn't seem to gel the way that I think most people working for the company would have hoped, most people that follow the company would have hoped. And now where you stand today, kind of, it feels almost like TNA's trying to, I wouldn't say regroup or rebrand, but kind of strengthening the assets that they have and re-strengthening the ones that maybe that weren't given enough attention during the previous regime. So what's it like being guys who, you know, have went through that last regime and now are at the forefront of trying to put the company's best foot forward going forward?
I think that, well, you made an interesting point. There was something you said during your question where you said the previous people working for the company, and I think that there's my first point, is that I think there were a lot of people who were here previously who weren't working for the best interest of the company. They were just simply working for themselves, whether it be to just cash in for a while they gave themselves a rest from somewhere else, or whether they were just, you know, I've got much deeper theories on it than I have time to explain right now. But now I think that as far as the new team is concerned, the only reason that we're talking about that is because it's sort of something that over the last kind of 6 months or so, I would say, has really started to kind of blossom and start to kind of, you know, there was a period where there was a lot of uncertainty, you know, when we were, and there were a lot of us starting to, you know, just thinking like, I wonder, you know, not necessarily worried or one way or the other, just curious, like, you know, what's going to happen? Where is this, it felt like we were constantly adjusting and we hadn't sort of settled into a groove yet. And then it suddenly, it seemed like, you know, with like EC3, who's doing great, Bromans have completely come into their own, you know, Sam Shaw's doing awesome. like there's a whole group of sort of newer talent who now are like really, you know, myself, I still include myself in that group, you know what I mean? Which even though I've been under contract for 5 years now, I still think of myself as like a new young talent trying to kind of, you know, trying to earn my place every week, you know, and I always look at myself that way. And then there's the very established stars like Joe and like Bobby Roode and like James and people like that. And I think that the secure ones, like those guys I just mentioned, the ones who are secure in themselves and in their character and in their level of popularity with the fans, they're looking forward to it. You know what I mean? They're licking their chops at the idea of a whole fresh batch of matchups and, you know, and people to sink their teeth into. And that's what being a good pro is. And I think that that's the way we're all starting to talk about it now, is going like, wow, there's just so many more options now. There's a lot more versatility on the roster and there's a lot more energy. I think that the last 3 months or so, especially, there's been a real shift in energy. There's been a real kind of positive upbeat. And I think that also has to come from some of the additions that have been made, you know, behind the scenes as well. Guys like Raphael on the live event side, he's done a fantastic job and he's really like boosted everyone's, you know, that there's just a whole new kind of confidence in looking forward in the future.
I tend to agree with the sentiment that the regime is not necessarily completely new. It's more that the focus and the focus has shifted onto different players and different people's visions within the company. And as a result of that, you know, and this is, once again, I'm kind of reiterating what Magnus said. This is kind of, you know, we've noticed an emergence over the past few weeks of, you know, just a really innate chemistry among the people on the roster right now. And it's an exciting time. It's one that I've seen happen before in my career. And, you know, just the vibe and the atmosphere is very good backstage as far as talent goes and the talent's confidence in each other's abilities.
Yeah, I think just to echo that point as well, I think that there's you know, there was a time, you know, probably a year ago or so where if I wasn't wrestling Joe, I would come back from my match and he would be one of maybe one or two people who would have anything to say or who I would ask, you know, who I would look to, you know, to help me out with something. And now it's like, it feels like, I was just thinking about this last weekend in Japan, you know, this is like the whole team, everybody was right there, you know, for each other. Everybody was going like, hey, I really like that thing you did, and I like this, and that was good, or I, you know what I mean? And there's a lot more, you know, encouragement and just sort of enthusiasm for each other's work and for the whole product of the whole team, you know.
Well, that certainly sounds like a positive, not just for you guys personally, but for the overall product and obviously the business, because wrestling needs a company like that right now. So, again, I wish you guys nothing but the best, and I think everybody wants better things for TNA going forward, and I thank you both for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Michael D'Souza with Crush Radio.
Hi, guys, again. I just want to bring things back down to lockdown this Sunday. Now, in TNA's past, steel cage matches were held in the six-sided ring, the six sides of steel. What's it like to prepare for a match in six sides of steel compared to today's steel cage?
So are you talking about specifically the six-sided ring?
Yeah. So what's the difference really between the two?
Well, I think I may have had one match in a six-sided steel cage. I think, you know, honestly, I think it was like a multi-man something or other. So, the six-sided ring was, you know, was, I mean, you, Joe's a better person to ask than me, but I think it was just, you know, you just, it was, the only thing that was different was just sometimes just having to adjust yourself a little bit as far as like hitting the ropes and running and, you know, just a little bit of spatial awareness, but, and it was stiffer.
You know, I found with the six-sided ring, I could throw Magnus's head off of six different surfaces. And now that we have a four-sided cage, there's only four. So that being kind of a pseudo-disappointing difference, but I guess we'll get more quality throws as opposed to quantity. So, I mean, I think I got that going for me, so that's kind of cool.
That's about the only thing. But yeah, we're done talking about the past. I think you've forgotten the fact that that was, you know, the six-sided deal was quite some time ago, and we're looking at the future now, and the future is staring you in the face on Sunday.
That's very nice to hear. In fact, actually, speaking of the future, Magnus, Joe's already competed in this type of match, but you haven't. Would you consider going in Ultima X?
Of course. I'd take on any challenge that's given to me. And I think that, honestly, if I was putting an Ultima X, you know, a lot of the less informed fans out there who spend not enough time trying to find a girlfriend and too much time commenting on wrestling matches would probably expect me to not handle myself that well. But I think I would probably surprise a few people in that, because I'm a pretty athletic SOB when I want to be.
Fair enough. Thank you very much for your time, and good luck on Sunday.
Your next question comes from the line of David Gilbert with Talk TNA Podcast.
Oh, hi, Magnus. Just a quick follow-up for you. Do you think that your TV and that your stage work helped you when it came to understanding sort of what it means to perform on a wrestling TV show? Like, I'm trying to tell everyone that, like, basically wrestlers today are, like, cast members on a television show, first and foremost. And do you think that being on TV is something that a lot of sort of the younger wrestlers are struggling with?
I agree with everything you said, apart from that last bit where I don't believe that wrestlers should be looking at themselves first and foremost as cast members on a television show. I think that that mentality has probably led to a demising in-ring quality, because I think that there have been a lot of talents who, had they been less inclined to lean more towards what they can do as far as their facial expressions and their media savvy and their sort of ability to talk to the media and be on television shows and be on like Nickelodeon and all these kind of things, you know, that they would have been forced to you know, work, you know, enhance their craft in the ring. I think that your craft in the ring, wrestling will always begin and end in the ring. And I think that, you know, the most difficult thing for young wrestlers coming up now, myself included, was getting enough time and getting enough matches under your belt, you know, and enough experience of different crowds and different territories and you know, different opponents and different situations in the ring. I think that, yes, absolutely, my time on Gladiators and my, you know, other acting work and stage work I've done, absolutely, it's helped. You know, it's given, if nothing else, than just confidence and just technical ability of you know, technical knowledge of how television works and you know, and things like that. But really, ultimately, what it comes down to is, you know, is reps, you know, in the ring and time and that, you know, and I think that there's never going to be a substitute for that, you know, and I think that if people are looking for that, then they probably need to look for another job.
Okay, that's great, man. Thank you. Joe, just a quick one for you. Obviously, you've been in TNA, like I said, for a long time. I've wrestled pretty much everyone. Does anyone stand out as maybe your most memorable opponent during your time in TNA so far?
In TNA, I mean, you know, I'd be hard pressed to say that Kurt isn't at the forefront of that list. It's tough to say. I mean, AJ, Christopher Daniels. I mean, I've had so many great adversaries throughout the years in TNA. And but I mean, of those that I've had, I guess those gentlemen spring to the forefront.
Oh, that's great. All right, good luck again on Sunday, guys. Have a great match.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Anthony Caruso with Capital Sports Report.
Hi again. A previous reporter mentioned about Sting, and you guys said that he's made a good living. Do you see him sitting out for a while? I know there's speculation that he might be signing with WWE and might be coming into the 2015 Hall of Fame, but nothing has come of that. Do you see him coming back to the ring like in a couple months, or do you see him sitting out for a while?
I have no idea. You know, Sting has, you know, he's in a position that he's worked hard to get, which is, you know, which is that he has plenty of money and options, and you know, he might just be wanting to enjoy his time at home. I know his kid's doing really well in football, you know, so it may just be that he wants to just take some time out. I have no idea, but whatever he chooses to do, I wish him all the best, because he's been very good to me, and he deserves it.
You know what? I have no idea, and I haven't even begun to speculate. If I had to give you my quick speculation, I think Sting is going to measure his time accordingly, think out his options, and act on them in his best interest. And I would expect nothing less than that. I mean, I think he's a very smart individual, and I think he knows what lies before him. And I mean, Sting's accomplishments and career are already vaunted enough, and he's well aware that anything he does now just adds to the legacy. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, what Sting does is what Sting does, and I don't think anybody really has any bearing on that except the man himself.
Thanks again for your time, and do luck on Sunday.
Thanks.
Your last question comes from the line of Adam Davey with V2 Journal.
Hey, gents. I just wanted to pick up on a couple of things that Magnus said earlier on about. A, first of all, the on-screen time that some of the previous stars who've been in TNA have had, and also about new ways of the way the media is now, you know, having to explore new channels. So I want to touch on MMA, and obviously there's time of Bellator and Spike where TNA is shown in the States. Do you think it was a good idea to try and tap into, you know, with Rampage and Tito, and do you think it's, and certainly with Joe's background in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, do you think it's a good idea to maybe try and tap into that market?
I think in general there is a cross section of the pro wrestling MMA fan. I truly think there is. I think you'll always hear the MMA fan say no, that's not the case. But you know, I just tell some the people that I've known that are involved in the MMA industry how many of them are pro wrestling fans, and you know, bring a lot of pro wrestling style into what they do out in the media and in the ring and in the octagon or in the cage or in the, you know, whatever venue they have them fighting in. So, I think there is a cross-section. I think a lot of it boggles my mind. I think a lot of people make the argument, oh, the pro wrestling fan and the MMA fan are a very separate entity. Yet at the same time, most of the people that are saying this, they are both MMA and pro wrestling fans. So it's just a matter of what, you know, kind of connects with the crowd and finding that thing that sparks the interest, whether it be in MMA or in pro wrestling. And, I think bringing guys like Tito and Rampage in, you know, appeal to that cross-section. So I think it was a good idea.
I think it all depends on the way that they get used. You know, I think, like, it's the same way that if we were to cross over into another genre, you know, If utilized in the right way, then they can be effective. If given too much emphasis or used in the wrong way, then it can detract from the product, and that just comes down to the individual choice.
Well, thanks for joining us tonight, and good luck on Sunday.
I'll now turn it back over to Eric and Jessica.
Thank you for your questions and your participation in the call today. A reminder that Lockdown premieres this Sunday, March 9th. Have a good rest of the day, guys.
Thank you. This concludes today's conference. Speakers, please hold the line.